Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Beyond Diagnosis. Today's guest is every woman's answer to their sometimes overwhelming menopausal symptoms and what they can do about it. Joanne Posey is a registered nutritionist and expert on menopause. She works one-to-one helping menopausal women who are fed up with their symptoms and are ready to commit to action. So to start shifting stubborn belly fat, sort out terrible gut symptoms, and finally feel listened to using her proven four-step method. Hello and welcome to Beyond Diagnosis, a podcast to raise your awareness, decisions, and voice for alternative practices so you can take back control of your health. I'm Rita DeMichel, your host, a mindset and empowerment coach, and the founder of the Onus platform. Join me each week so you can create the health of your dreams. Joanne, I'm so excited to have you on the show to learn about your methods.
Well, thank you for having me on. I'm delighted to join you.
Oh, it's great. I mean, it's such a pleasure. Now, your work, really, it speaks to every woman 40 plus who's thinking, what on earth is happening to my body and where's my former self? The changes can sometimes be intense, you know, affecting us physically and emotionally. So, you know, really, I would really like to start there and dive into what's happening, what's your process or journey that you take them through. So if we could start there, that would be great.
Yeah, I mean, I think... Yeah, you said it can be incredibly intense, and it can. And for some women, thankfully, for the majority of us, thankfully, you know, we're talking about 20%. It is horrendous. It's life changing. Mm. And it's absolutely. But whatever your experience is, though, it's made worse by the fact that up until relatively recently, we just haven't talked about this stuff. So yeah. The vast majority of us have gone into the transition knowing absolutely nothing. You know, it's we might those... have some vague notion.
Yeah, it's one of those taboo subjects, isn't it? It's like the crazy. Whole women's reproductive.
Half of the population, well, yeah, just insane. Absolutely insane. Yeah, you know, we've probably got some vague notion around hot flushes or mood swings, but the rest of it? And it's so incredibly wide ranging. And anecdotally, you know, I know of women who worry that they've got early onset dementia, or that they've got a brain tumor because they just can't remember anything. They can't learn anything new. Their energy has just disappeared. They've got all kinds of ridiculous allergies coming on. They're reactive to different foods. Their bones ache. Nobody prepares you for this. Nobody. And even if you've only got one or two symptoms, if it's something like random, your feet hurt. Problems with your feet is a symptom in menopause. If you can't flipping walk, that's pretty debilitating. So even if that's your one symptom, you're going to be pretty bothered, aren't you? It's a big one. Yeah.
That's, you know, I can put my hand up for that. I can put my hand up for that one. My feet.
Yeah. And did
hurt.
You know?
You know?
Did you know in advance?
Oh, God, no. I didn't know that. Yeah. I didn't know that, you know, memory problems, that's the big one. That is a really big one. Yeah. Like, even I will admit that sometimes interviewing people on this podcast, I go to say a question, I go to ask a question, and all of a sudden it's like, where did that go? It's like it just went out into the ether, and then I'm desperately trying to think of another question that doesn't come. Normally I'd think of something like this, but no, it just doesn't come. And you're sitting there going, oh my God, you know, it is debilitating.
Yeah. And, I think it's made so much worse as well, because we feel that we can't say, oh my God, that's just totally gone out of my head. Because it's embarrassing, because we want to be seen as being very, very mentally switched on and with it. Mm. So the fact that at any given time there might be five women sitting around a flipping boardroom table or whatever, thinking, Christ, my train of thought has just disappeared. They're not going to feel that they can basically live in that moment, that they are panicking, and that just makes everything so much worse.
It would, it
So, I
would.
mean, I'm looking for the day when on live television that happens to a woman and she feels perfectly comfortable to say, do you know what? I'm just having a menopausal moment. It'll come back to me. Let's have another question. And, you know, and how okay then does that make it for the rest of us?
It really would, because we've all accepted the saying, I'm having a seniors moment. I'm having a seniors moment, like I forgot that question, sort of thing. But to say anything that has to do with women and the reproductive and the whole, it's just taboo. You just don't say. And most, and I don't understand, but it's still the stigma around, oh, you're not going through menopause, but I am. So that means I'm older. It's still got an age, it has an age
Oh,
thing related.
huge.
And I think that would be very prominent in a work, because I know that you actually help a lot of corporate women with this. That would be a big thing in a corporate set, in a corporate setting, to go,
Oh,
oh,
100%,
it,
100%.
yeah, I'm sure a lot of them would think, oh, I'm in menopause. If I don't still perform 100%, my job could be at risk, because they think that I'm not going to perform as well. Would you like to speak a little
There's
bit
a
about that?
well, for sure. I mean, we know that, you know, there's any number of reasons why women don't want to out themselves in the workplace, and it's they are less inclined the more senior they are. I think
Of
there
course,
is only
yeah.
something like, at any level, there's only something like 20% of women in the workforce that have spoken with their line management and said, this is happening to me and I am struggling with whatever it is. When you go up the rung in terms of seniority, it's only 8% of women who will have basically fessed up and asked for help.
Wow, not a
And
lot.
it's a tiny, tiny number. And there's all kinds of different reasons for that. But yeah, absolutely, that sense of I'll be thought of as old. I will be thought of as not up to it anymore. I will be thought that, you know, basically I can't hack it, that I won't be viewed as a potential for promotion or whatever it is. I will be seen as less than if I put my hand up and say I'm menopausal, one, because of the stigma of being in menopause, but then the double stigma of, well, you're an old woman now. And there's still a lot of that internalized, you know, misogyny going on. And it's enraging because, of course, at this time, we're just stepping into our power. We have, by definition, we've never been so experienced. We've never been so knowledgeable. We've never been so qualified. But this is the time we just start to disappear. And
I was going to
it's,
say, they become invisible in a way, don't we? At the,
yeah,
you
yeah.
know, they're scared of becoming
Well, it's bad
invisible.
for the women, clearly, but it's bad for relationships. It's bad for the workforce. It's bad for the economy. Losing
Absolutely.
those women has a massive negative impact upon, you know, upon the bottom line. So it
Absolutely.
benefits everybody for this to be talked about and normalized, and for women to be able to successfully go through the menopause transition, knowing that they're supported, knowing what tools there are available for them. And just knowing that it's okay, actually, in itself makes the situation easier. And sometimes that's all that's needed for a woman to know that my employer is supportive, my line manager is supportive, this is okay. Taking those that stress out of the equation actually then will reduce, more likely than not, some of the symptoms that she's experiencing.
That's one of the questions that I was actually going to ask you. Apart from the fact that this is kind of a two-part question, apart from the fact that each woman is so individual and will present with different symptoms, and do you find that challenging in your work? And the second part to the question is, because they're all so individual, the environment would have a different impact on them. Like, one may be under a very stressful situation and she'll have these type of symptoms in menopause, and maybe someone else in the same situation and she won't have as many symptoms. So the one who's having more symptoms, even though they're going through the same thing, can be like, what's wrong with me? And feel disempowered. Can you speak a little
Yeah,
to that?
hugely individual, as you've said. And one of the problems that we have, even in talking about it more, is that there is a tendency to treat our knowledge of the menopause as being the definitive version. And we do have to accept that just because I didn't have a particularly bad menopause, or my partner didn't, or my manager didn't, or whatever, doesn't mean that my colleague or my sister or my mother's experience isn't very, very real if she is reporting that I'm struggling to get out of bed in the morning. And all the other stuff that we've talked about to do with memory and what have you. But yes, you're absolutely right. I mean, it makes my work incredibly interesting, and it's like being a detective in a lot of ways because the symptomology is so wide ranging. And part of my job is to try and get down to, well, what's the root of why this is happening for this particular woman? And clearly, obviously, we've got hormonal disruption. So there are things that we can do to try and even out and make that journey a little bit easier. But if someone presents with, it's clear that maybe their thyroid is struggling, and that's not uncommon, or that, and that one, I was going to go on and say, or energy, but the two there can be linked, or suddenly, their digestive system is really, really playing up. It's okay. What's underneath for that particular woman? Because there may have been certain things going on for the previous 10 years that she's just been riding out. But then you throw the hormonal roller coaster in, and the body just goes, do you know what? I'm not doing this anymore. So then it's looking at, okay, what is going on with her gut? Is there something going, is it is have we got inflammation? Have we got some kind of gut bacterial imbalance? Is it something as simple as this woman is stressed while she's eating, or she's not taking time while she's eating? It's amazing that the number of women that I see where I will just tell them to, right, I need you to sit down. Every time you eat, you need to be seated. I want you to do some breath work before you eat, and I want you to chew every mouthful 20 times.
And people don't do that.
And just as a tool to make you slow the heck down, because an awful lot of us inhale our food. We don't realize, but we're just, it's basically, it's we're not nourishing ourselves, we are just fueling ourselves. So we're just piling it in because we have to go on to the next thing. So it's no, take the time. Focus on what you're doing, put your phone to one side, and really treat it as an exercise in, this is me looking after myself. And just in slowing it down, it enables our digestive system to work as it's meant to. So we get that stomach acid ready to receive the food, those digestive enzymes are starting to get stacked up, and the reflux perhaps that a woman's had, that stopped because she's not just throwing food down her neck. So sometimes it can be the simplest thing like that. And other times it requires a bit more digging, might involve some additional testing. But once you've got to that root, then you find the positive ripples out from that. And the positive cascade means that even seemingly unconnected symptoms start to improve. So it's a bit like being a detective sometimes.
It would be, and it's kind of interesting hearing you talk about that because sometimes we can go to a doctor and say, I've got all these symptoms, I can't sleep, I'm fatigued, I've got brain fog, I've got mood swings, sweat, everything. And they say, oh, that's fine, you're either perimenopause or you're in menopause. And they prescribe hormones, which, I have nothing against whatsoever. I've even taken
Oh,
bioidentical
me neither.
myself. But what I'm saying is that still sounds like it's the hormones fault or it's the hormones problem. What you're saying is the hormone may be the end result, but what is affecting, what is happening in your environment or some other condition that is affecting your hormone as opposed to your hormone affecting you? Is that right? Or is that a way to look at it? That the hormone, don't go to the end, which is the hormone. It may be a lot of things prior that are imbalancing them.
Absolutely. So it's definitely, I think, I mean, as with yourself, I'm a fan of bioidentical
Absolutely.
hormone therapy. I mean, why wouldn't you take advantage of something that's going to help you, that is going to make your life bearable?
Yes.
Then absolutely, I'm all for women using whatever tools are at their disposal.
Yes.
100%. So, but I mean, to me, that's in lots of cases, it can seem a little bit reductive. And so, I mean, and my role is to look at the woman in her entirety. It's much more of a holistic approach.
Yes.
So, I mean, we all know how bad the standard Western diet is. We all know how bad that is. But by definition, the vast majority of us are eating it. If you can start making positive changes to that, in addition to or instead of whatever suits you as an individual, the HRT, then you're actually going to be positioning yourself for much better health over the longer term. We look at different things like, we have greater risk of cardiovascular conditions post-menopause if we're not taking HRT. We have greater risk of things like osteoporosis, but it's not necessarily a direct line between menopause and a heart condition. We have to look at everything else then that's feeding that. Our risk becomes equivalent to a bloke's of the same age. So then it's our
Yes.
lifestyle factor. There might be a genetic element, but typically there's an awful lot that we can do to mitigate our risk. So then it is, well, actually, is our diet supportive of our long-term health objectives? And most of us want to be vital and active and useful and happy into our 70s, 80s, and beyond, I would
Absolutely,
expect, certainly for
absolutely.
myself.
You don't want to be
So
growing
to
old
make.
and not capable.
Yeah, absolutely. So making those positive dietary changes, adding that movement in, not allowing yourself just to become sedentary, looking at your stress management, all of these different things are going to nourish you in different ways and give you a really solid platform for a healthful second life. Because it's our health span that I'm interested in, not our lifespan.
Absolutely. There's no point living a long life and you can't do anything, you're sickly or you're bedbound. If you want
Exactly,
to
yeah.
have a long life, at least you have to have a healthy life so you can enjoy life. Is
Yeah.
there a particular, I wouldn't say diet, but a eating regime that you think is more supportive for women at this stage, or is that completely individual?
I think as a rule, and certainly certain individuals will need certain tweaks, but for most of us, it can be quite simple. So I would say that, I mean, I use in a lot of my courses as a helpful tool is just a plate plan. So that wherever you are, you can mentally impose that plan upon your plate and know that, okay, I'm ticking all the right boxes. So if you have your mental plate in your head, a quarter of it, that's your protein. And potentially we should be eating more as we get older.
Oh, we should be eating more protein as we get.
More protein typically than we have on average through the rest of our life. The older generation should be eating more protein to support that renewal, to support keeping ourselves healthful.
Right.
Half of your plate should be vegetables grown above ground, so not the rooty stuff. So all your salad vegetables and your tomatoes and your peppers and your aubergines and all these kind of things, half of your plate filled with those, and then the other quarter is your root vegetables or your whole grains, and always, always make room for healthy fats. Do
Yes.
not be afraid of fat is your friend. So get your healthy fats in there. And I think for the vast majority of us, if we are following that plan, most of the time, and I always say that we're aiming to get it right 80% of the time.
It's the
And if we're
80-20
doing that,
rule.
exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
So then if we're doing that 80% of the time, it doesn't matter that we're sat in the cake shop. it's there's room
You
for
gotta
that.
have a
There's
treat
room
every
for
now
you.
and then.
Of course you do. Of course you do. You want to feel that you're still part of the human race, if you can still go to the party and still, celebrate your birthday or whatever. There's definitely room for, coffee and a cake. Absolutely. But say if you are thinking about that plate plan and using that for the vast majority of your meals, you really can't go far wrong.
Yeah, it sounds sensible. Which brings me to one of the most important things I think during this time, especially since women at this age really come into themselves. I find, you let go of a lot of that comparison and worrying about what other people think, and you feel a little bit more empowered. But how important is it that we accept our symptoms and what we're going through from ourselves, that we don't judge ourselves and compare ourselves to others or say, why have I got this? Why is my skin so dry? Why has my hair become frizzy? That we actually don't, what's the word I'm looking for? Judge ourselves. How important is our mindset whilst going through this period?
Oh, I think it's central, genuinely. And as you say, not judging ourselves, not being disappointed in our own bodies. Because this, our bodies are keeping us safe. We are transitioning into that second life that I talk about. And it's enabling us to let go of some of those old responsibilities. And that's great. That is, if we've put our childbearing and child rearing years behind us, and to say, well, actually, this is now my time, and so that was then, but now is the time for me. And if we can think about that transition as the, it's almost like it's the kind of, it's the holding room, it's the entrance hall towards the marvelous next life that we can make for ourselves. And if I think if we can treat it as one, that release from having a menstrual cycle, who flipping Ray,
Yes.
so I appreciate there are some women that grieve the loss of their fertility, but
I wasn't one of
and
them.
they are, no, certainly I wasn't either. I wasn't either. But and certainly I think it's understandable, and that, and those women should be supported through that. But I think possibly in certain cases that grieving process can be because we've been almost trained to think of ourselves as being nothing more than reproductive organs that work. But if we can get beyond that and really start to accept and celebrate all of the other gifts that we have. And as I said before, talking about how much more experienced we are and all the qualifications that we have and all the different gifts that we have, that we are brilliantly positioned then to think, well, as I said, this is my time. What am I
Yes.
going to do with it? And I might continue doing the same, but I'm going to do it as spectacularly as I can. Or I might decide that actually, do you know what? I am ready for a change in whatever area of our life that might be. And that I am better equipped now than I have ever been to make that change and to make that change a successful one.
Absolutely.
So I think if we can forgive our bodies for this disruption and not judge ourselves negatively, apply whatever tools are available to us, get the support that we need, and then think, right, okay, what am I now going to do with all of these decades that are, that are stretching out ahead of me? And it's probably
Yeah,
very exciting.
absolutely. And it can be so empowering. How do you help women to gracefully let go of the way their body did look? You know, maybe had much slimmer hips, or you had less back weight or whatever. How do you help them? What's some of the strategies you use, like mindset strategies? What have you used to help them gracefully let go of where they were and accept this new body? You know, because you're not going to be back how you were in your 20s or your 30s, or maybe even in your early 40s. You know, once you go 45 plus, the changes start, and you can fight against it, or you could move and flow with it. How do you help some of your how the women that come to you?
That is, yeah, it's hugely, it can be very, very challenging for sure. And again, this goes back to our culture with this celebration of youth, and particularly in relation to how women look. And there is a sense that a woman's aging body isn't, it's like you're not allowed to age, or it's automatically going to be unattractive. I think there's definitely space for accepting that, well, really do need to exercise, and that is non-negotiable. If you want to be healthful for the rest of your life, you really have to exercise. And that doesn't necessarily mean going to the gym or whatever. If you love to dance, then go to some dance classes, or dance around your kitchen, or whatever it is. If you love to go hiking because the great outdoors is your thing, then get yourself out there and make time for that. And that in itself clearly is going to support us in having a body that is strong and is going to do what we want it to do and is still going to give us some definition. But I think on top of that, if we can understand the reasons why some of those changes that are happening, so for example, that the belly fat is can be a biggie. So we start to put on that layer of fat on our tummy. And yes, there's stuff that we can do potentially with diet, etc. But that pocket of fat that starts to develop, and those pockets can be big pockets or little pockets, but that pocket of fat that develops, that in itself is our body looking after us, because that is your body looking for estrogen effectively. So in the first instance, your body will go, right, well, okay, I'm going to get my estrogen from our ovaries. Oh, okay, they're not working anymore. Right. Now I'm going to get my estrogen from the adrenals. And the body takes a compound called DHEA and converts that into estrogen for whatever estrogen needs we have.
That's
Now,
interesting.
production of DHEA does decline as we get older, so that can become more challenging. And then as well, if we are very stressed, then production of that might also be compromised if we're constantly asking our adrenals to produce adrenaline and cortisol. The third place our body will look for estrogen is our fat cells, because our fat cells, particularly that belly fat, they're estrogenic. So
Oh, that's really
that
interesting.
body, yeah. So your body will actually look with both, will hold on to that pocket of fat, because it's, well, this is providing us with something that we need. That pocket of fat is actually healthful. Now, obviously, there are degrees with this, but it's estrogenic, and therefore, if you can look at it as, okay, well, I don't have the flat tummy that I had in my 20s, but I've got this pouch, and actually, I know why it's there. It's supporting me. So, if we can start to understand why those changes are happening, support ourselves to stay healthful. So, doing all our load bearing, maintaining our muscle mass, maintaining our bone density, but at the same time, then appreciating that, well, actually, that bit of body fat is healthy for me. And we know as well that if we are slightly, if we've got a bit more meat on us as we get older, our health chances are actually better. Again, there are degrees in
In
that, but
moderation, yes.
having that in moderation, yeah, but having just that extra little layer of fat is equated with better health outcomes than if we are perhaps as very slim as maybe we were in our 20s and 30s. So again, it's trying to get away from what does society tell me a beautiful body looks like? And what do I know that a healthy, energized body looks like, and one that is going to better suit me now in this stage of my life? So that was a very long-winded answer, wasn't it,
No,
Rita? But I think.
it was a fantastic answer because I got so many aha moments out of that. And in actual fact, what you were saying about the belly fat and the body's getting estrogen from the fat, I mean, that is incredibly liberating to actually know that you're not looking at it and thinking, oh, I'm hardly eating a thing. What's wrong with me? I've got this big belly. What am I doing wrong? And you're judging yourself, and you go and pump out more weights or train so much harder to get it down. But your body actually wants it there, and it's producing a little bit more fat there because your estrogen's too low. To actually know that is liberating. You can stop judging yourself because you're understanding the reason behind it. And then when you actually going back to when you said about the adrenals, the DHEA and the adrenals, and the body looks for estrogen there. I mean, I didn't know that, but would that be why sometimes we feel so fatigued? Because the adrenals were under stress for the estrogen connection.
Well, that as well, that links in with our what's going on with our thyroid as well, and can be one of the reasons why we're so tired. It's because hyperactivity, for want of a better expression, in our adrenals is compromising and having a negative knock-on effect on our thyroid function. What our adrenals do for us by way of that stress response is responding to what we perceive as being an urgent signal in our environment. Our body believes that we are in a life or death situation. We have not evolved away from ancient life or death situations on the ancient African savannah. The
Yes.
response that we have is exactly the same. And our body thinks that, as I say, that we're its existential threat. So, because we're an existential threat, it doesn't matter how fertile we are, it doesn't matter how well we're metabolizing or detoxifying or digesting or anything else, we could be dead in 2 minutes. This is what our body thinks. So, everything gets directed towards feeding that adrenal response. And then there's the cascade of different physiological and psychological effects from that. So we get our blood sugar goes up, so that enables us to run away. We become more vigilant and hyper alert. And so obviously that keeps us more aware of the danger and where is it. So there's all this different stuff that's going on in the body that's enabling us to get away from the saber-toothed tiger. But of course, the
That's right.
saber-toothed tiger doesn't exist. We've got too much work to do, or we've had an argument with somebody, or the traffic is terrible, or we've got financial concerns. Whatever it is, the reasons why we're stressed aren't life or death, no matter how important they might be at that time. But say the response in the body is still the same. So all the other important but non-urgent stuff is still getting downregulated. And we know that adrenaline has a negative effect both upon the production of and the action of our thyroid hormones.
Yes.
So if we are constantly producing adrenaline, our thyroid is potentially going to start struggling. So over time, and so that we can start to see issues with both thyroid hormone production, but then the conversion of that T4 into T3, which is our active thyroid hormone. So there can be all kinds of negative cascades on that. But yes, both on our fertility, and the effects that it can have, post-menopause. Stress is a bugger, and it's one of the things I find hardest to that women find hardest to actually allow themselves to introduce as their stress management tools. They can get on board with, okay, I'll eat more broccoli. They can get on board with, and I'll go for a walk, or I'll do some push-ups, whatever. Asking them to sit and, have a go at meditation, go and do a yoga class, just do some breath work. Those are the bits that they find hardest to introduce into their world. Perhaps because they feel as if, well, I'm not doing anything. And if I'm not doing anything, I'm wasting time.
That's a big one,
But you're
isn't it?
not. Yeah, you are doing something. It's very important you're allowing yourself to decompress. And we can't live our lives in that fight or flight. We need to rest and repair. So doing nothing is very productive sometimes.
As I guess that feeds into the whole self-care, allowing yourself that little bit of self-care, which can then impact your hormones, and it can be quite supportive whilst you're going through menopause.
100%. Yeah, absolutely. We need to keep ourselves a priority, and we can struggle a lot with that as well. And certainly, if I'm working with women over time, it can be a case that they will start out with all their best intentions and, yes, I'm doing this. And then over time, potentially, it's, oh, well, no, I haven't done that this week, or I haven't done that this month. And it's, oh, I have to do something for the kids, or something came up at work, or something's that. And there's always going to be something.
That's
And
right.
we have to find a way to push our own needs back up that priority list, because we are the most important person in our world, regardless of whether we have a partner or we have children or whatever our familial situation is. We are the center of our own universe, and we have to remember that. If we're no good, everything else falls apart. So do everyone else a favor by looking after yourself first.
That's the
It's
empowering. Yeah, that's that personal power, the empowering part of it that is so essential. Yeah, because we do hold things together, especially if you have a family and you have kids and all. We do. And if, especially whilst you're going through menopause, and especially if you are feeling exhausted, or you are struggling with a little bit of depression from it. Without self-care, you end up spiraling down, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We know that our tolerance for stress can take a bit of our hit during this time. So it's more important than ever that we put ourselves front and center and remember how important we are and how amazing we are, because we do hold everything together. It's funny, I was doing some reading just last night, because, as you may be aware, there's really only humans and certain species of whales that we know that will go through menopause. And I was looking at the situation with orca, killer whales, and why we think that happens with them. And it's because those, well, one, because those pods are, they are matriarchal. So it's the older women that basically, that run the show. And relieving them of those calf producing duties means that they are liberated to then do all the other functions that hold that pod together and ensure the survival of that pod. So they remember where the best feeding grounds are. They remember the best way to defend the pod against any danger. They've been around long enough that they have all this information at their disposal, and the pod and evolution has recognized that is vital for the success of that pod. We need to release our matriarchs from their old responsibilities so that they can better their society. And we should think of ourselves in the same way, because we know inherently that
Fascinating.
we do hold, Yeah, we do hold everything together. And actually, we should step into the position that, well, yeah, I'm the center of the flipping universe. I make the sun come up in the morning. Nothing happens if I don't make it happen. And we are all just such amazing creatures that I think if we could accept and recognize what we bring to the world, and then demand that everyone else accepts it and recognizes it, my God, what can't we achieve? Nothing.
Nothing. It'll be phenomenal. Phenomenal. And so true.
Absolutely.
I would love
Yeah.
to talk a little bit about you. Apparently have the 4-step framework that you take women through. Is that correct? In your work?
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
can you
So,
speak a little bit about that?
yeah, sure. Yeah. So we start with that all important, you know, I was saying before about digging for the root. We need to know what's going on. So we
Yes.
start with that research. So, and then that, so that really is a deep dive into that woman and her health history and what's going on with her now, but what was going on 20 years ago, 30 years ago? When did these symptoms start? What's your family history? How much support do you have in your day-to-day life? How much stress do you feel you're under? How well are you sleeping? And it really is looking at the whole thing holistically. And from there, we can start to join the dots.
Yes.
So from doing that deep diving research, we can then move into the, okay, well, let's actually work out what's, you know, where we think all these symptoms are coming from, or this health condition is coming from. And so we move into that explanatory phase. Post that, then we are, okay, we think we know what's going on here. Right, implementation. Let's start just nibbling away at this. And of course, it has to be in stages because that's the way that things will actually stick.
Yes.
So we start introducing those changes. And then we revisit. How's it going? How are you feeling? Do we need to make any changes? Do we need to start moving things around? Do we need to start adding in? And so it's really the whole thing is an evolution.
Yes.
And then things might shift and change. And then, you know, and I'll see women that come back to me a couple of years later and they're just like, well, I don't have that thing anymore, but now this is happening. And so it's right, well, okay, let's dive into again. So why is that particular and where's the trigger for that? And maybe what's driving that particular symptom? And so as I say, so we start with, we do that deep dive exploration, we work out what the different patterns are, we start nibbling away at and putting that implementation in, and then we revisit and we revise and we evolve. And typically I find that by the time that we've got to the end of that process, what I'm looking for is a woman that is actually feels, I've got this. I don't, thank you, Joanne, but I don't need you anymore. And that for me is, well, that's brilliant. Because I don't want you to need me. I want you to feel that you've got all the tools at your disposal. Of course,
Yes.
do feel welcome to come back at any time. But, you know, I don't want you to feel tied to me or that you need me to keep yourself well. You've
Yes.
got everything you need to, you know, to be able to feel empowered to do it yourself.
Well, it sounds like an amazingly holistic, empowering approach, which is, which is what we need. We need that type of approach. We need the type of approach where people feel that they're in control and come to practitioners for support. Not, I would, that's my hope with this, is that you feel so empowered within yourself and you come and seek support, as opposed to, I feel powerless, I'm out of control, I don't know what's happening. Help me, you do it for me. You give me all the answers. I have no control. It's about really taking back control of our own health and then come and seek support. So you're brilliant. I love it. I love the way you're working, which brings me to my next question, where I would really like to know, really deep down, what is your why? What is your why for doing this work?
Oh my goodness. Well, I am a, you know, it's interesting because I was, it took me a while to actually to know what my true why is. Because I came to this from 20 odd years in finance and I had some health issues myself, which then led me into researching and exploring and doing some qualifications just for me, which then led into the professional qualifications, et cetera, and at that point, it was all about opening the door to everybody on just how fantastic that they can feel, and how simple it can be, because it should be simple. If it's complicated, it should be simple. And just sharing all this information I had. But in focusing on and specializing in women in menopause, as a lifelong feminist, lifelong, as long as I can remember, my why is 100% is supporting women and enabling women and empowering women to see how amazing they truly are. It makes me so angry that I realize that, great, now I'm in my 50s and now I've still got this different level of crap to have to deal with. And I'm still not respected, and I'm still not, and there's all this rubbish going on. So it's like, does this never stop? So it's now for my why is to give women the tools that are going to help support them and hold a mirror up to them so they can see how phenomenal they are, and that they have all of the gifts at their, all of their own gifts at their disposal, and those gifts are all they need. They just need to recognize them and pick them up.
I love it. I absolutely love it. And thank you so much, Joanne, for coming on to the show and sharing all your knowledge and your zest for women during this phase and helping women remind them that they, even though they may be in menopause, they are absolutely powerful and they need to believe it. I hope that all the listeners take away that message today because it is such an important one. And thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure
Thank you
having you
for
on the show.
inviting me, Rita. Genuinely, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you. I would love to know what was the biggest insight or aha moment you got from this interview, so you can now speak up, take action, and make informed decisions for your health. And if you like this episode, get instant access to your free ebook, Alternative Wisdom: Taking Back Control of Your Health, at life-onus.com.